All right. Welcome back to the big program. Just after 9 o'clock in Edmonton, man, we are looking for some great temperatures today and tomorrow. 20 degrees tomorrow, 19 today or so. Again, watch parties outside down in Ice District. We'll be jam-packed tomorrow night, especially after all the positivity from last night in game number one, as we welcome in our Tuesday co-host to the big program, Grant Fuhr, the former Edmonton Oiler and Hockey Hall of Famer. Good morning, Grant.
How are you, Kevin?
Yeah, not too bad here. Everyone really, as you can imagine, you know, when the Oilers win a playoff game, you know, even though it's a later night, everyone in town spring in their step and things like that. What did you make of the game last night? Game number one, a 7-4 victory.
Now, you know what? I thought it was a pretty entertaining game. I thought the Oilers did a good job of coming out and establishing their speed. And when they do that, they're going to be hard to beat.
Do you think that, you know, everyone talked about going into the series, a 1-3-1 that LA sometimes employs. I think we only saw it twice last night in the first period, and that's it. That goes to game script because, you know, they were playing from behind. But did you really notice a lot more speed trying to get through the neutral zone for the Oilers?
I thought they did a really good job of attacking with speed. Mm-hmm. And LA had a hard time handling it. And they got themselves back in the game when the Oilers kind of took the foot off the gas pedal a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And first off, just your thoughts on Stu Skinner. He made a big save on Fiala early. It was just off to a weird face-off where the puck just squirted out. That was, you know, I'm sure as a goalie you want to just get the feel early, and that was a big save.
Yeah, most definitely. And I thought he was solid all night long. I mean, yeah, they got a couple of late goals. I think the one bounced off a nurse's skate. Mm-hmm. And the other one, he kind of got left hung out to dry. But you get a big lead, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, yeah, he had two goals, like one off a nurse's skate, one off a Bouchard skate, and then I think the one you're talking about, Cody Ceci's stick just snaps, and, you know, they're, you know, basically a two-on-one down low. But what about that save that he made on Arvidsson? Just got a piece of it in the second period there.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, a big time in the hockey game. Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those saves that kind of keeps the momentum going, and it, as a goalie, you want to make a save that can change the game or keep the game where it's at. And that was one of those saves.
Mm-hmm. Grant Fuhr with us on Sports 1440. At the other end of the net, at the other end of the rink, what did you make of Cam Talbot last night?
You know what? He didn't get a whole lot of help from his defenseman, mm-hmm. but Cam played solid. And I'm sure he would like to have maybe had Dreisaitl's power play goal from down low. I mean, that's a tough angle to give up a goal, but at the same time, Dreisaitl's done that a lot. So mm-hmm. it's one of those, but at the same time, if LA's going to have a chance against Edmonton, he's going to have to be better.
Yeah. Would you ever entertain for game two, putting David Rittich in?
No, I think you got to ride your horse.
Yeah.
And I think Boston found that out yesterday. They switch goalies, they end up losing 3-2. So sometimes you got to take and just ride your horse a little while.
So let's look at the Boston situation. Were you surprised they went away from Swayman after his performance in game one?
No. I mean, Boston's alternated goalies all year long, yeah. So that didn't shock me at all. But I think as the playoffs go along, you're going to start to see that change a little.
Yeah. What did you make? I mean, Ullmark made some fabulous saves last night, though, as well.
I thought he played really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Toronto's top line played better. I mean, Matthews, I think that's the best game I've seen him play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And if they go down 2-0, they were pretty much done. So they played with a lot more desperation than Boston did.
Yeah. What did you make of, again, Austin Matthews? He had a game, you know, where they needed their guy to come out with a big performance, and he did last night.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's part of the maturity of the game. I mean, the last couple of years in the playoffs, when Toronto's got eliminated, he hasn't been at his best. And last night, he was at his best.
Mm-hmm. Let's go around the league with Grant Fuhr with us on Sports 1440. The Vegas-Dallas game last night, 4-3 Vegas. Were you surprised that they went with Logan Thompson ahead of Adin Hill?
No, I think Thompson's probably a little bit healthier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing. And he's played very well all year. They both played good all year. So they both got banged up a little bit. And Thompson may be the healthier of the two. And they're playing a good Dallas hockey club, but at the same time, all of a sudden Vegas is healthy now. And when Vegas is healthy, they're tough to beat.
Yeah. What did you think of Thompson last night?
He was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he made the saves he had to make. And I think as that series goes along, the Golden, whichever goalie is better is going to be the big difference.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, let's just stay with last night. And I mean, with Jake Oettinger, you know, he was so good down the stretch for Dallas, really solid. Did you think he was a little bit off?
He didn't have his best night, but at the same time, it's only one game. And you know he's going to get better. And you can say that about the Winnipeg-Vancouver game, too.
Mm-hmm.
Both goalies had an interesting first game. So, I mean, when that happens, it's one game, you let it go and you play on.
Mm-hmm. Got a text coming in from Randy. Ask Grant what Skinner about his play on the first goal. It was a shot from the blue line. That's the Mikey Anderson goal, screened by Trevor Moore in front. So I guess Randy's asking that Skinner's down on the play. Is that technically what he's looking to do with a long shot with through a screen?
Well, that's you're playing percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do nowadays is they play percentages. And if you've got a crowd in front of you, the automatic reaction's to go down. And people realize that, so they're starting to get pucks up. Forwards in front of the net don't appreciate that. But at the same time, if they go in, the forwards get over it pretty quickly.
Yeah. And, I mean, he didn't see that at all. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. It was a good screen by Moore, and defensemen are looking for that. It's sort of a flyby. And how often do you see that as a goalie, Grant, like that flyby screen?
Yeah, you see it a lot more now.
Yeah.
I mean, guys are getting very good at it where it used to be they just planted themselves in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you could move out right in behind them. It's a little bit tougher when they're moving left to right or right to left. You've got to be a little more careful about getting way out because if there is a rebound, they're off to the side of you instead of directly in front of you.
Right. Let's zip back to Sunday as we're with Grant Fuhr on Sports 1440. And that Winnipeg-Colorado game, Grant, I hope you didn't close your eyes watching any of that with 13 goals. Again, is that just in front of the goaltenders where things are loose defensively? What'd you make of that game?
Yeah, I thought both teams were kind of loose defensively, and it turned into one of those last shot win games. I mean, that's good old-fashioned Smite Division hockey, so it was fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, everyone says that. It was like the 80s and playing, you know, either the Oilers and Kings or, you know, the Oilers and Jets had some high-scoring games. And, you know, if you're Colorado, how do you move forward? You put six past Connor Hellebuyck, who's going to win the Vezina for the second time, gets the Jennings. You're kind of are you not thinking as a team we put six back the best guy in the league to everyone's standards, but we still couldn't win?
Yeah, that'd be a little deflating. And you're not going to get six every night against Connor Hellebuyck.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is. You're probably going to get maybe two. If you play really well, you might get three. So knowing that your goalie has to be better puts them in a little bit of a tough spot because, again, if Winnipeg comes out and wins – to go up 2-0, you're in a tough spot.
Yeah. And I mean, the situation with Georgiev, does he look like he's comfortable in goal, Grant?
He didn't the other night.
Mm-hmm.
The other night he struggled. And that's part of the problem is now where do you go?
Yeah.
And they've got Eustace Annan in there, who's a pretty talented kid. But again, do you want to throw him in that situation where it's a must win?
Yeah. And he's been hurt, or he was ill, I guess they're saying, for the first game. Don't think that he'll be ready to go tonight, they don't think. We'll see what happens as the day progresses. If Georgiev doesn't have a good game tonight, do you go to the youngster, Anunin, in game three?
I think so. I think if Georgiev's average tonight, then you make the switch. I mean, that's... you're looking for some kind of momentum, and if your guys are starting to look over their shoulder and doubt the goalie, then you've got to make a switch.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the Vancouver-Nashville series, I mean, Thatcher Demko made a great save early, and everyone was wondering how he was going to react after, you know, missing a fair bit of time. What did you see from him?
I thought he played really well.
Yeah.
And again, he's going to have to play really well, and he makes the difference on that hockey club. If you watch when they play, when Demko's playing, they play a much more confident game. Mm-hmm. And it's a little more offensive than you normally see from them. And it's because they've got the confidence in Demko.
Yeah. How would you describe the type of goaltender he is?
He's a big athletic goaltender. Mm-hmm. And he can make the saves you're supposed to make, but he also makes the saves that you're not supposed to make. And part of that is being athletic, and he reads the play extremely well.
Mm-hmm. Just got to get a couple of quick golf questions with you. I mean, we talked about Scotty Scheffler last Tuesday. This guy, I mean, as we said in the break, I think only the weather can stop him. I mean, they had to get round four, the final round of the RBC Heritage. He wins again.
That wind's going away.
I mean, I'm trying to find a comparable here. And are we going all the way back to Tiger Woods here, or where are we at?
Yeah, probably ball striking wise. You take a look at the ladies' game as well. You look at Nelly Korda. Mm-hmm. For as good as Scotty's been, she might actually have been better.
Yeah.
So Scotty's won four in a row, she's won five in a row. So, hey, you've got two number ones in the world that are both very dominant.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little Blue Jays baseball. Have you been watching a little ball, Grant? Or too much going on? Too much going on.
Oh, no, it's playoff season, so hockey gets first priority.
Yeah. But you know what? You're exactly right. I have a hard time, and I love the Blue Jays and watch almost every game, but haven't been able to get to them the last couple of nights just because there's just too many games to keep an eye on. But we'll talk some Blue Jays baseball with Josh Vernier from 610 Sports Radio. He covers the Kansas City Royals, where the Jays won last night to kick off that series 5-3. We'll have Allison Sandmeyer Graves, CEO of Canadian Women and Sport. And women's sport is taking off, and she's got the numbers to prove it. And then your old buddy, Charlie Huddy. He was at the game last night. On the Jumbotron. And actually, I saw Charlie on Saturday night, Grant. He was at the Toast of the Town as they honored Cal Nichols. Charlie and Mac T were there, and Kevin Lowe was there. So the Oilers are very well represented. So it'll be an interesting conversation. When was the last time you and Charlie got together?
When did I talk to Chuck? I talked to Chuck.
Love Chuck.
probably a month or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
But wow. Always a good soul.
Yeah. He told me on Saturday night, he's getting ready to get the Harley out with Gord Steinke. So he's fired up about that.
Well, nice weather does that.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie loves going on those bike rides. So that's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. When we come back, Josh Vernier, 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. We'll talk a little Blue Jays baseball with Grant Fuhr. Kevin Karius on Sports 1440. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to the big program. We're just waiting to check in with Josh Vernier from 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. Kevin Karius, Grant Fuhr with you. Hey, Grant, Lindy Ruff returning to Buffalo. What do you make of that? Is he the right man for the job in Buffalo to get this team back to the playoffs after 13 years? Whoa.
You know what? Buffalo hasn't really been successful since he left.
Yeah.
So... And I like Lindy as a coach. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's a little bit old school, but at the same time, he's successful. So I think he's going to do well there.
Did your paths cross quite a bit with him over the years?
As a kid, yeah.
Yeah. Warburg,
baseball. We played baseball against each other. Hockey against each other.
Really? Where was the baseball? Where did you guys play baseball against each other?
He was in Warburg.
Yeah.
And then I was out in Spruce Grove, so...
So like minor ball or what?
Minor ball, minor baseball, hockey.
You know, we might have to get Lindy on to talk about that.
So we'd like to say it was a couple of days ago, but it's more.
Are you guys the exact same age or what are you at?
No, Lindy's a little bit older than I am.
Okay.
But Lindy played with his brother, Marty.
Marty, okay. Yeah, it's funny, you know, out of a little town like Warburg, you've got Lindy Ruff and then Dave Haxtell. You know, in Seattle.
Yeah, Lindy Ruff, Marty Ruff, yeah. Randy Ruff,
mm-hmm.
Dave Haxtell. So
great, great little sports town. Where were you playing these ball games, Grant? Just in tournaments or was it a league or what?
Just in tournaments. Well, they were in our league. We didn't play any of the city teams being out in Spruce Grove. We're always the county of Parkland.
You know, you got to tell the story again when you were playing ball, when you were with the Oilers, because sometimes our listeners are hit and miss and maybe they forgot the story, but run us through when you were playing baseball when you were playing for the Oilers as well.
Yeah, I pretty much played men's senior ball right up until about my fourth year. Then I get summoned to the office and Clint Sather kind of put an end to that.
What did he say?
I turned an ankle over one year in baseball playoffs just before training camp. He frowned on that a little bit.
What did he say at that little meeting or whatever?
I got the "we're not paying you to play baseball" speech. So that curtailed the baseball. So the next year I played fastball, and that didn't last very long either. I got summoned again. So. Yeah.
When you're playing at that point, like how are you juggling this? Like, I mean, the games are obviously at night, or what was going on? You're practicing and then going to these games. How did it work?
Yeah, I played all summer long and probably played right through into training camp. And if we'd skate in the morning and the ball game was at night, I'd go play ball. And it was just my way of staying in shape. Is you were always active.
Yeah. Back to the Oilers, game one victory over the Kings last night. Connor McDavid, 5 assists. Zach Hyman, 3 goals, 1 assist. Describe the chemistry you see between these two players, Grant.
You know what? They play very well together. And Zach Hyman's smart. He's one of those guys that will go to the dirty areas. And it's a hard job to have because you're going to get whacked and hacked, being off the edge of the crease all the time. But Zach Hyman does a great job of it. And he does a great job of getting himself in a position to receive the puck and be able to finish it.
What about the addition of Adam Henrique on that line?
You know what? Smart player.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you add a smart player, it adds another option and it's harder on the defense.
Yeah. You look at all the left wingers that Connor's played with, and I was talking to Speck about this, going back even to the Patrick Maroon days. And if you go back a long time, for some reason, whoever's played left wing on Connor's side, and you know Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has had good success there. There's no question about that. But what it does is maybe imbalance the other lines. So, what is it about Henrique that adds that element that maybe we haven't seen in the past?
Well, he's a smart player in his own zone. He adds that defensive prowess in his own zone, which allows Connor to freelance a little bit more. And at the same time, it makes that line a little more responsible in their own end as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a situation where it's a veteran guy too? Maybe a younger guy isn't grasping that yet?
Yeah. You know what? A veteran presence helps. And he understands the game. He understands what Connor's game's all about. He understands what Zach Hyman's game's all about. And sometimes adding a veteran guy in just settles things down a little bit in their own end.
Right. All right, time now to elevate your game, brought to you by Ram Elevators and Lifts, Forbes' best-rated residential elevators manufactured right here in Edmonton. Visit trustram.com for more information, as we're going to talk a little Blue Jays baseball and Kansas City Royals baseball with Josh Vernier from 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. Good morning, Josh. You're with Kevin Karius and the Hockey Hall of Famer, Grant Fuhr. Thanks for hopping on Sports 1440 this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure. Grant, thanks for all the years of entertainment.
No, thank you.
That happens every time, Josh, and every time. What did you make of the first game of this series yesterday, Josh? And for Blue Jay fans up here, we are really, really impressed with how Yusei Kikuchi has gotten off to a start this season.
Yeah, that to me was the takeaway last night, despite the fact that the Royals' starting pitching has really been the reason why they find themselves 3 games above 500. The takeaway from last night was Yusei Kikuchi was just better than Brady Singer. And then you're going to follow that up with Kevin Gausman and Jose Barrios. Mm-hmm. In the finale, you guys know it normally comes down to pitching and defense. And last night, Toronto's was better. And when I look at that Blue Jays rotation, I'll stack it up with the Phillies and the Mariners, the Royals and Red Sox with the best in the major leagues right now. And it's certainly not going to get any easier for this Royals offense, which has been down somewhat over the past week and a half. Not going to get any easier with that Gausman splitters coming at them tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be wicked. And then, you know, the Jays added Yariel Rodriguez and they pony him up with Bowden Francis. So it's almost like a double starter that you'll see in 2 days. What do you make of the Kansas City Royals lineup so far this year, obviously led by Bobby Witt Jr.?
Yeah. For a team that lost 106 games last night, a team that is led by a 23-year-old in Bobby Witt Jr., a 24-year-old in Michael Garcia, and a 26-year-old in Vinny Pasquantino. Now, I understand Salvador Perez is the captain of the team, but if this organization's going to go anywhere, it's going to be on the backs of those 23, 24, 25, 26-year-olds. When they lose 106 games last year, this front office had to do something, or else they were going to get to a point where, you know, you just start to expect, well, in Kansas City, this is what we do. We lose a lot. But the front office went out, made the type of acquisitions to bolster that rotation, bolster that bullpen. And the early season success, I think, has given those young bats not only the type of confidence that I belong in the big leagues, but I belong on a winning team. And the talent in this clubhouse might just be enough for us to play a meaningful game in June or July or August, something that hasn't happened here since 2017. So even though the offense has been down for the past week and a half, I do think there's enough confidence in that clubhouse and among those young hitters that they will avoid an elongated slump, despite the fact that, yes, a formidable opponent's going to be on the mound tonight and really throughout the next 15 days as the Royals play 15 straight games against teams with a 500 record or better. The offense has talent, and I now think it's equipped with confidence, and that's a scary thing. So I don't believe that they're going to step into the box tonight carrying the recent slump. I think they're going to carry confidence and go right at this Blue Jays rotation for the next 3 days.
Yeah. Go ahead, Grant.
So with the Royals offense being down a little bit, would that coincide with Perez being a little bit banged up?
He's a guy right now at the age of 33 that is focused first and foremost on winning, but in the back of his mind, he wants to end up where you're at. He does have visions of baseball's Hall of Fame, and he is on that trajectory. So this isn't a guy that is going to, as most Hall of Famers are, a guy that's going to give in to injury throughout his career, whether it's concussions, it's COVID, it's knee surgery, it's elbow surgery. He had this one ailment where fluid would build up behind his retina and he couldn't even see out of one eye, and yet he's still posting every day, putting up numbers. So Salvi has reached base, I think, now with 11 straight games. So he's always banged up, and yet he has something inside of himself that doesn't allow the pain, the soreness to affect him during the game. I can only imagine what his nights and his pregame preparation are like. But Salvi's been the best player on this team. For as well-rounded as Bobby is, the most consistent hitter on this team has been Salvador Perez. He's been the guy that you want up in the big spot. So to me, the slump right now has coincided more so with quality opponents and really good pitching on the other side. A three-game series with the Baltimore Orioles, including a matchup with Corbin Burns, and then, as we mentioned, one heck of an effort last night from Kikuchi.
Yeah, no question about that. We're with Josh Vernier, 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. What about MJ Melendez? Last year, this was a situation where he really put the bat on the ball quite well, had good barrel contact, didn't get a lot of breaks as far as balls falling in and maybe hitting the gaps. Had a quick start. Has he fallen off a little bit? How would you assess how MJ Melendez has played so far for the Royals this year?
To me, he was one of the real pendulum swingers for this team coming into the season. Last year, you're right, was hitting the ball hard consistently, but couldn't find a hole, couldn't find consistent success. But also when you're playing, you know, 162 games, six games a week, you don't have much time to just work, just focus on improvements and adjustments and then not being forced to immediately implement those in the game. Because often with hitters and pitchers, you can work all morning on adjustments. You can have a plan of attack, but then you get up in that batter's box and you're fighting for your life. You're going to revert to what got you there. And I think that hurt MJ. But then he gets to the All-Star break. He's able to work for three, four straight days, not have to perform at night, just focus on how I can improve and working on those adjustments, and took off in the second half of the season with an OPS north of 850. That's continued here into the early point of the season. He's won two or three games for this team with game-winning RBI. So he's one of those guys I was talking about that got that early season influx of confidence that serves as a reinforcement or validation that what I did last year in the second half is real. Melendez, to me, has the power to run into 25, 30 home runs a season. He just needs to try and cut back on the strikeouts. I think he's been doing it this season. And as he continues to grow in the game, I would think that power is going to continue to be on display.
Go ahead, Grant.
So as the season goes along, do the Royals have enough in the bullpen to make it a meaningful June, July?
If the rotation continues to do what it's been doing, which is giving you six innings and a chance to win in all but basically one game this season, 22 out of the first 23 games, I think the rotation has given the Royals a chance to win. They're third in baseball in innings pitched, fourth best ERA, fourth best whip. If that continues, that allows your bullpen to rest, which makes them fresh and I always think better as the season goes along. But as we all know, this sport often turns into a battle of attrition over 6 months. So can these starters stay healthy? How often do we see a rotation go a full 6 months needing only five starters? Not very often. So the depth will be tested. I think they have some pieces down in the minor leagues that can help the bullpen. But when and if they lose one of these starting pitchers, that to me is going to be the fork in the road in the season for this team. Do they have enough depth starting pitching-wise to make up for the loss of fill-in-the-blank starter? I think they have enough in the bullpen, but the question is, can the starters maintain?
How would you say Reagans has been, I mean, just phenomenal since coming over from Texas?
Yeah, he's been one of the three, four best lefties in the sport since that late June trade last year with the Rangers that sent Aroldis Chapman to the World Champions. And yeah, former first-round pick of the Texas Rangers, two Tommy John surgeries, knocked out three seasons for Cole Reagans. But, you know, it's been fun to watch him accept the role as the ace, as the number one, because not only is there – you know, a certain pride and pressure that comes with it. But now you're squaring off with horses every fifth day, like coming up in the finale. Cole Reagans going opposite Jose Berríos. He's already faced off with Pablo Lopez once and Corbin Burns twice. So, you know, it's nice to be the one, but you don't often get a chance to breathe because your offense is facing a horse and they're asking you to match whatever the guy on the other side's doing. But so far, so good, and the kid's got a great mentality focused on team first, not so much on the individual.
Mm-hmm. Grant, have you got one more for Josh here?
So as we look through the year, what do you think a good record would be for the Royals come the end of the season?
Coming off a season in which they went 56-106, even though the fan base probably wouldn't like me saying this, if they can get into 70, 72, 75 wins and show real improvement, that to me would be good enough for me. I think it would be good enough for the fan base, and I think it would show that clubhouse that we're close. Now, one more offseason of work. Let's show up next year with bigger goals, with you know, the taste of blood in our mouths. Let's go win next year. Let's go attack this regular season. So even though right now they're in second place and Royals fans are dreaming about October glory, it's a long season, and the American League East, the American League period is just deep, and you got to go through them all. So yeah, give this Royals team 72 to 76 wins. I mean, that's a 16 to 20 game improvement. I'll take that all day.
Yeah, one last one for me. What kind of manager is Matt Quatrero?
Yeah, he's been really fun to get to know. He's kind of a ball of baseball cliches, and I mean that in the best way. Like, it's when he says we turn the page immediately after the game, and what happened yesterday doesn't matter today, and what happens today doesn't matter tomorrow. When he says that, it's not the Bull Durham throwaway cliche that you don't really mean. I mean, he lives it. He is that even keel, be where your feet are, always present, never living in the past. And I think that's a pretty good leader for a clubhouse full of inexperienced, talent-laden ball players that, as I mentioned earlier, have never played in a meaningful game in June, let alone in October. Sure, Salvi has it, a few of the free agents that they brought in, but most of these guys are normally out of it by the time the by the time we get to the Ides of May, the season's a wrap. So
yeah,
I've enjoyed learning Matt Cutrero, but you know, like his players, he's got some pretty big tests that lay ahead of him. He's never managed in a game that's meaningful in the month of June, so should be an exciting summer in Kansas City.
Hey, Josh, really appreciate your time. Enjoy tonight's tilt with Walker and Gosman. I'm really looking forward to Thursday with Reagans and Barrios. That should be a good one as well. Thanks for coming on today.
I'm with you. Thank you very much.
That's Josh Bernier, 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. And elevate your game by Ram Elevators and Lifts, manufacturing the safest elevator since 1987. TrustRam.com. When we come back, Allison Sandmeyer-Graves, CEO of Canadian Women in Sport. Some revelations, some really exciting news regarding women in sport. That's coming up on the Kevin Carey Show with co-host Grant Fuhr from Palm Desert on Sports 1440. Thanks for coming along for the ride this morning. We'll see you after the break. All right, welcome back to the big program. Time now to talk a little different angle of sports that we normally don't talk about, but we're going to talk with Allison Sandmeyer-Graves, CEO of Canadian Women in Sport. Allison, good morning. You're with Kevin Carius and the Hockey Hall of Famer, Grant Fuhr. Welcome to Sports 1440. Thanks for jumping on this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So, Allison, a little study comes out. It's a kind of a first of its kind Canadian study that is highlighting Canadian fans and where and how women's sports is being viewed, reacted, involved with. How did this study come all about, and what did it reveal?
Well, listen, I appreciate you talking about this today because I think it's one of the more exciting stories in sports right now. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do this research at Canadian Women in Sport because we believe there's a big gap in our sports system when it comes to women's professional sport. Obviously, we have the PWHL, which dropped their first puck in January this year. But over the last 2 years, we've been really looking at the business case behind women's professional sport because it is a business and investors are taking a hard look at it and trying to decide how and whether they're going to play in this space. So we've developed a business case with Boston Consulting Group last year. And what is very clear is that fans are completely at the heart of this business. We need to understand, you know, who they are, how many there are, you know, currently and into the future. And there's data from other parts of the world, but not here in Canada. We know that Canada's its own market with its own dynamics. So that's why we set out to do this, and we were pleasantly surprised by the results.
Go ahead, Grant.
So with the PWHL, how's it been received so far up in Canada?
Well, it's been really well received. And what's interesting about this study is it actually surveyed Canadians in October before the PWHL had started playing. And what we found was that 17 million Canadians between the ages of 13 and 65 in this country consider themselves fans of women's sports. Mm-hmm. That's a baseline. And I have to believe it's already going up because the PWHL has been filling arenas all across Canada, has broken several records in the span of its first season for attendance at a women's hockey game, most recently at the Bell Centre in Montreal this past weekend. So yeah. I think, you know, in case we're wondering like, oh, maybe this is just a first season, can they sustain this? The fact that there are so many Canadians who are looking for opportunities to be fans of women's sports and who are saying they're eager for more, I think really just tells us that there's a lot of potential and the PWHL is the first one to grab it.
What did you make of that game on the weekend in Montreal? Simply amazing, Allison.
Well, we've known for so long that, you know, our Canadian women athletes are just world class. They're absolutely outstanding. I know there's some Americans on the team, too. But they're a ton of fun to watch, and they've been this fantastic product in search of an audience. You know, the fact that, you know, an arena of that size was sold out, and you got to go to one of these games. The energy in the stands is absolutely electric. It's like a festival. People are so pumped. And so, you know, it's a fun thing to be part of. It's a fun thing to be a fan of.
Mm-hmm. So, Allison, how would you rank it? We know hockey's, you know, the number one sport in Canada. But what about the other areas? And, you know, just touch on, you know, soccer and other sports where, you know, maybe there might be a lot more eyeballs on women's sports than there were in the past.
Well, we're equally excited to see Project 8 announce its league, and teams are starting to roll out very soon, too. So Project 8, for those who don't know, is going to be Canada's first domestic professional soccer league for women. It's led by Diana Matheson, who is who wore the red and white for Canada for many years on our national team. And we know that soccer has an enormous fan base around the world, a huge fan and player base here in Canada. And when we look at, you know, these fans and what they're saying they're already consuming, you know, they're consuming the World Cup, they're consuming the Olympics, they're consuming the National Women's Soccer League in the States, and they're fans of sports, period. You know, it's an equal balance, roughly, maybe a little, excuse, a little more male, but like men and women, they're all fans of women's sports, and they're following all of these teams and leagues already around the world. So let's give them something to cheer for right here at home in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Grant?
Would you say that the soccer is driving the women's sports in Canada?
Oh, that's a great question. Not necessarily. Actually, when you look at, you know, what they're already, what these fans are already fans of, a lot of them are fans of the NHL. That's one of the biggest properties and leagues that they follow. And so, hockey still features very strongly in this set of fans. But I think that as we make things more available here in Canada, not only are we going to see more avid fans, but we're also going to see more people joining as casual fans. And what's really cool is that these fans, relative to the general population, are more diverse, they're affluent, they're well educated, and the younger fans are really engaged and looking for more. And so I think that holds enormous potential for these teams and leagues and for all the sponsors and brands that get involved with them.
No question about that. Allison Sandmeyer-Graves, CEO of Canadian Women and Sport, our guest on the Kevin Carey Show with Grant Fuhr on Sports 1440. Allison, what about the grassroots? It's so important, and not just with women in sport, with girls in sport, with every child at any age and every gender. But we are talking about women and girls in sports. So what's the balance there, and how important, or what is the importance of getting in on that grassroots level to make them sports fans for life?
I so appreciate that question, because we really have to look at this as an ecosystem. You know, these things are all interconnected. And what these Canadians told us is that 8 in 10 of them played sports growing up. And that was part of how they became fans of sports. And so when we look at how we grow that fandom, absolutely, investing in grassroots sports is going to be a big part of that. And of course, investing in professional sports creates role models and, you know, opportunities for kids to connect with their heroes. It really creates this mutually reinforcing dynamic between the grassroots and the professional. And that's going to just change the landscape overall. I don't think we can really fully appreciate what sport is going to look like in 5, 10, 15 years when women's professional sport is just a normal thing in this country. You turn on your TV, you can watch the NHL, you can watch the PWHL. You know, I think this is going to be a real game changer.
So after the surveys come out, what's been the reaction that you've received?
Well, we just launched it yesterday, so it's brand new on the scene, but lots of positivity. I think a lot of people are saying, yes, we knew it. You know, we believed it to be true. And I think, you know, a lot of investors are hopefully going to take a hard look at this. And sometimes it's a matter of looking again. As you know, there's a lot of bias in our society and in sport. You know, there's been a lot of pervasive beliefs that, like, well, nobody's going to watch women's sports. We can't invest there. It's too risky. Mm-hmm. I hope that research like this really starts to change that conversation and frankly puts that narrative to bed, because there's a ton of opportunity here. And so let's take a hard look at it. Let's be part of building what's possible in this country.
So what's your next steps here? What has to happen here in the next, you know, whether it be week, month, year, to continue to keep this snowball rolling?
Yeah, so right now we're really focused on making sure that these insights get into as many hands as possible so that folks can benefit from it. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Canadian Tire, you know, this is free for folks to access and make use of. So we're sharing it widely with agencies, brands, media, you know, our national sport organizations, and really want to make sure that they are supported to not just take these insights in, but like, what does this mean for our business? What does this mean for the decisions that we're going to make going forward? And, you know, it's only going up with the number of fans. It's only going to get better and better as these teams and leagues enter the space. So we want to make sure that we continue to provide insights, that we continue to track this as a trend, and that we're supporting also the teams and leagues to set themselves up to make sure that, you know, women are being supported in every aspect of the business.
Allison, thanks so much for your time this morning. Great conversation and great results from this survey. Can't wait to see what happens moving forward, because, it's a wave, it's a movement, and it's great to see. Thanks for this.
Thanks so much. Yeah, there's no going back from here.
Yeah, you're right. Allison Sandmeyer-Graves, CEO of Canadian Women in Sport, our guest on the Kevin Carey Show with Grant Fear. You know, Grant, Danielle Serdachny was at the game last night, the Oilers game. They brought her in. She was signing some autographs. I know you know her dad, Steve, and Danielle scored the gold medal goal for Canada at the World Hockey Championship against the United States. Now, there's just another example of you know, a young woman. Boy, we had her on the show last Thursday, and boy, she's got the world in front of her. The PWHL draft is coming up. You know, you've got the Worlds just finishing. You've got the Olympics coming up. It's an amazing time for young women in sport that have the desire to pursue their goals.
We actually lost Grant. Oh. The computer just completely restarted.
I felt like I had a great soliloquy there.
well, you have to repeat. We'll play it back. Play it back in real time for Grant here at the top of the hour.
That's fine. I love it. We'll get Grant back because we've got to check in with Charlie Huddy at the top of the break. We've also got our In or Out segment with Grant at 10:20. And then Nav Ramirak from Turn Sports, in case you missed it. Sports 1440 going 24/7. 7 days a week, we will be, we used to have Fox Sports come in at 9 o'clock, but we had a segment from 6 to 9, and that wasn't sports. It was what it was, but now it is what it is, and we are 24/7 sports. So we are really looking forward to all of that with Turn Sports coming aboard, starting May the 1st, broadcasting weeknights from 6 o'clock till 9 o'clock. And, they'll be talking about everything. Basketball to cricket, they'll engage in the discussions. It's just going to continue on from the Jason Greger Show. So really looking forward to checking out Turn Sports. And again, we'll have Nam Ramirak coming on at 10:40. When we come back, it will be Charlie Huddy, the former NHLer, teammate of Grant Fuhr. He was at the game last night. Before all that, time now for a Sports 1440 update brought to you by your Alberta GMC dealers. Get up to $6,500 cash purchase credit on a 2024 Sierra 1500 Denali Ultimate. This is all during Truck Month. Oh, yeah, you can see more at gmcoffers.ca. Here is the Duke.